This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Alyssa Bloch.
And I'm Michelle Norris. A few years ago, journalist Mitchell Zukov was doing research when he came across an article about a World War II plane crash in New Guinea. It had all the elements of an unforgettable story, a terrible accident in a harsh landscape, three survivors, including a beautiful young woman, a hidden world where people were still living in the Stone Age, and a daring rescue mission. Now Zukov tells the story in his new book, Lost in Shangri-La, and NPR's Lanier reports.
New Guinea has an unforgiving landscape, high mountains often shrouded in clouds, surrounded by dense rainforest. In World War II, much of it was uncharted. Hundreds of planes crashed there, says Mitchell Zukov, and few were ever found.
New Guinea was a sort of a graveyard for planes.
Mitchell's book is the story of one of the few crashes where survivors lived to tell the tale. The flight began as a sightseeing tour on May 13, 1945. 24 men and women stationed in New Guinea headed out to fly over a hidden valley that had been nicknamed Shangri-La.
It's an enormous valley, 40 miles long, 8 miles wide, inhabited by anywhere near 100 to 120,000 tribesmen who were living basically a Stone Age existence.
The plane flew in low between the mountains so that the passengers could see the valley and the native villages and fields. No one knows the exact cause of the crash, but low-lying clouds obstructed the pilot's view and the plane slammed into the side of a mountain. In an interview 15 years ago, one of the survivors, John McCollum, recalled the moments after the crash.
The tail of the airplane had been broken off. The fuselage had been flattened out to the point I could not stand up. I could see it was burning up in front, so I wasted no time getting out and jumped down on the ground and stand around, looked at my watch and said, this is a heck of a place to be, 165 miles from civilization, all by myself on a Sunday afternoon.
But McCollum was not alone. Four more passengers had also survived, though two of them later died. McCollum's twin brother, who was also on the plane, was among the dead. As a lieutenant, McCollum was the highest-ranking officer. He was also the only survivor who was not injured. Zukov says McCollum quickly took charge and made all the right decisions.
He knew his brother's body was burned inside the Gremlin Special, right near him, and he knew that he had to put that aside and make decisions like we need to move away from the plane. And then when everyone tells you should stay with the wreckage, you're more likely to be found, he understood that he had to get them somehow to a clearing, to somewhere where they had a chance of being seen.
McCollum led the two injured survivors, Corporal Margaret Hastings of the Women's Army Corps and Sergeant Kenneth Decker, on an arduous trek through the dense jungle and down a steep, treacherous gully into an open area where they were finally spotted by rescue planes. It was then that they first encountered the natives of the valley. Rumor had it that they were cannibals and headhunters, so as John McCollum told an interviewer, he proceeded with caution when he met up with their leader.
There was a log kind of running across this little gully, and he walked out on the log, and I walked out on the log. We got closer together, and I said, everybody smiled, and he smiled, and finally gets real close, and I reach out and grab his hand like that. He grabbed my hand. From then on, we were all friends.
While the survivors were making friends with the natives, rescue plans were getting underway. Philippine-American paratroopers, under the command of Captain C. Earl Walter, Jr., volunteered to parachute into the valley and bring the survivors out. But there was a catch.
The superior officer said, well, look, if we drop you guys in there, there's just one thing. We have no idea how we're going to get you out. They said, Bahalanah was their gung-ho motto, which meant come what may.
By then, the story of the crash and the survivors began getting the attention of journalists who were particularly intrigued by the attractive young corporal, Margaret Hastings. Reporters joined the flights that showered provisions on the growing contingent of survivors and rescuers on the ground. And finally, one day, a documentary filmmaker parachuted in.
He screws up his courage with a little bit of liquid courage and just sort of dives out of the plane, and he's swinging like a metronome because he is dead drunk on the way down. And he just, he literally lands flat on his back in the valley and starts filming almost the minute he's sober enough to open his eyes.
It was this filmmaker who documented the final rescue. After much consideration, it was decided that the only aircraft that could get in and out of the valley were gliders. At first, says Zhukov, it seemed an unlikely choice.
Who among us said, okay, wait a second, we have no way out. Let's drop gliders into this valley a mile up off the ground, and then let's have these other planes come by with hooks on their bellies and snatch these gliders back into the air. And oh yeah, and we have to do it multiple times because we can't fit everybody on each glider.
Everyone is strapped in. They take a deep breath and hang on. Here comes the tow plane. Low and fast. Lower and lower. Now, full power. Bang. They're on. They're hooked. There they go.
It was a remarkable end to a remarkable story. Many years later, Margaret Hastings would tell an audience, "When you have no choice, you have no fear. You just do what has to be done." That is, in many ways, the very definition of survival. Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.